Welcome back to the Move Fam. I'm JB Hager, but more importantly, we have Mari Holden in Ventura, California, Ali Tetrick out in Petaluma, California. Welcome. It's good to have you guys. And we've got a lot to cover. So forgive us if we jump all over the place, which Ali does normally anyway. We just have a lot to cover because there's some racing that has already happened. But this, more importantly, we want to preview the classics, which are underway. And in fact, a couple of them already happened that we haven't mentioned. So let's start with, you know, early season, what you're seeing. And things you're observing, and you know, we'll kind of start back with the tour of UAE. What were your thoughts watching all of that?
So we've had a lot of racing going on since we last talked. So Mari and I have definitely been voraciously consuming all the amazing women's bike racing that's happened. We haven't done a huge show about it, but I think looking back from, you know, of course, went to Australia first and into UAE. And one of the common threads we've been watching is some team dynamics. So into Strade Bianche, we have Drenthe, lots of weather occurrences across the world, lots of snow and rain. So looking at the UAE tour, one thing we can see is how some injuries and illnesses have occurred, but we can see what riders are prepping to peak at the classics, which ultimately will just be able to showcase what's happening on in the classics and what we can expect. But I'm going to start on this team dynamics because we had two very unique team situations. So Elisa Longo Borghini, as I call Lamborghini, won the UAE tour. And she has this brilliant teammate working with her, leading her up the final climb. Gaia Riolini, she is 4 feet and 11 inches tall.
Oh man. No draft coming from her.
I mean, she's young too, like really young. Mm-hmm.
And Elisa's winning the overall. So Lamborghini's winning overall and her teammates just pulling, working so hard. And it's just a pure, brilliant Italian climber. Definitely the mountains suit her quite well. So I'm excited to watch her the Tour de France. Fom of X Swift later.
Yeah, how much climbing did they get at UAE? It wasn't a ton, was it?
It's not a ton of climbing, but they had one mountain stage, and this is it's a huge mountain. It's very famous, and they're riding up it, and you have, so that was the ultimate day, was this like fitness, and it's early in the season, and she's leading out Elisa. So up the climb and you kind of think, okay, Elisa's going to win the overall. Surely her teammate gets gifted this stage and in the radio, apparently, and you know, they're all hugs and there was no bad blood there, but Elisa takes the stage as well as the overall. So I don't know, but that's what the team director said, because there's bonus seconds at the line. So,
oh, right. Yeah.
You know, whenever you've got bonus seconds and you're finishing on a hilltop and there's something, you don't want to leave something to chance like that. I can see why Ina would have made that decision. You just can't, it's the one time you probably can't leave something out there. So, I mean, Gaia, I'm hoping I'm saying her name right, but I feel like she said that she was fine with it and everything, and she's going to have plenty of opportunities during the season. I mean, when you're 21 years old, that's just a sign of what's to come. You know, she's going to have some great opportunities.
Yeah. So I think it was a very beautiful experience, but you're kind of like, you just wanted her to win because she's like the young one that did like all this work. And you're like, Elisa's going to get the overall. But yeah, leaving nothing to chance. So I was just asking Mari as a director. She's also, you know, a world champion and all that, but she's directed quite a bit of Olympic level athletes too. So it's just making that call was probably a little painful, don't you think? Or,
well, yeah, I mean, no, everyone probably wanted her to win the stage, you know, including Ina, but you just can't do that in an uphill finish like that unless you're pretty sure no one's going to make up any time. So I think it was a reasonable thing. And I mean, I feel bad for her, you know, young and could have won her first, you know, huge race, but it's coming. She'll have more chances.
There's a real role for a domestique, and there's a lot of dues to pay and experience to gain. And you're celebrating at dinner if your team wins. That's the goal. It's not like they're upset at dinner because they didn't get that win, right? You know, it's a team effort.
Yeah, 100%. Cycling's very team oriented. So I actually then want to jump in a little bit ahead of schedule here to talk about Strada Bianchi.
Okay.
Because Strada Bianchi had another very interesting team dynamic where Damy and Lotta from SD Works, both teammates, catch Kristen Faulkner, an American, on Bike Exchange. They catch her on the last K, very steep climb up into this town. It's a very hard climb, by the way. I have raced Strada Bianchi and I thought I might fall over going up that last climb. Like, it's very, very steep. And they apparently did not have any communication who was supposed to win. So Damy kind of gets shoved into the barriers a little bit, falters. She has to catch Lotta, her teammate, and then they sprint to the line and both throw their bikes.
It was a pretty exciting. It was a pretty exciting finish, you know. I mean, because they were bringing her back the whole like last part of the race, as they were bringing her back, and they asked Demi afterwards, you know, did she think she was going to get her? And she said, yeah, we knew we were going to get her on the climb. But I it's a hard situation to decide who's going to get that win. And once they had left her, you know, it was probably they just decided, you know, we're just going to sprint it out and just went for it.
I'm not sure there's a lot of communication between them because Damy was definitely coming back from her little barrier incident. And then she's coming back and Lotta had won Strada Bianchi last year.
Yeah.
And so you go, okay, Damy's the queen of the mountain, second overall, the Tour de France, Femme Swift. You know, she has maybe more opportunity, but Lotta is so fit right now and a very good one day racer for sure. And not like a stage grabber. Like, she is so good at that. But the finish line, I didn't feel a lot of love.
No, it didn't look like there was a lot of love going on there. And you can understand why, you know, I mean, both of them wanted to win. That was obvious. And they clearly hadn't decided beforehand who was going to get the win in that situation. But they both went for it. And it was, you know, I mean, once they had dropped Kristen Faulkner, it seemed like, you know, it was each man for himself at that point.
So I'm thinking, each woman, each rider for themselves. But I'm thinking that the caravan was so barraged because it's a very technical finish into the town. And then there's they're going for it. But I don't know what Anna Vanderbergen was in the car that day. And I don't know what she would have said either. Maybe she just lets them sprint. So then I had an interesting thought was maybe like, why, since they're teammates, but they are definitely going to go one and two regardless. And so some people were a little upset because cycling, like, you let one teammate win, you do the bow, you hold hands, whatever. These girls bike through, like, they are just both wanting to win this, dare we say, a monument in women's cycling. And they both wanted to win so hard. And people are very upset that they didn't show teamwork and camaraderie and like, no, you have it. And I thought, well, like, why not sprint?
I'm with you on that. That's so much, that's a lot more exciting for the spectator, you know, for the fan out there. It's like, all right, you both got there. And the reason they're at that level is because they've been winners their whole life, right? They work hard and to win. It's like, yeah, okay, let's go one-on-one. Let's see who gets there.
And the fact was, as a team, they had brought back Kristen. And so they did the teamwork together until they were in the clear. And then they fought it out. It wasn't like they were going to lose. Their team wasn't going to lose the race at that point.
Right.
And there was no clear cut, like, you're the leader, we're trying to get you these points for the overall or whatever. I mean, it was them just going for it. I thought it was exciting.
I did too.
And there are a lot of, like, you know, it would be not a happy place to be, like, afterwards if you got second, you know, but, you know, it was exciting to watch. And as a team, they did their teamwork and brought it back so they could win. They still went for 1-2.
Right. And I think sometimes in cycling, we get so stuck in, like, this is the way it goes. Like, this is the way. Like, this is what we do in this sport. And I'm like, why can't you just turn it upside down every once in a while and two teammates sprint? Like, what if we saw Wout sprinting the other day and not gifting Jan Mulligan? Like, should he have gifted? Like, it's beautiful, but it's also like, why not race each other?
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes, like, the one thing that you might consider in that kind of situation is when you want your teammate to work for you later. So, you know, Demi's going to expect a lot of Kopecky to work for her at the tour and some of these stage races. And to beat her in a sprint like that, is it worth it or not? I mean, it's kind of sitting there deciding, you know, do we have a leader in the classics and we have a leader in our stage racing? And I expect this woman to give everything she's got to me later. Now, you know, hopefully professionally she'll do it, but is there going to be something where you don't know if you want to dig that much harder because you got flicked by a teammate at some point, or you think you got flicked a little bit? I don't know.
And how much does that affect a payday? Okay, so, you know, is there, there's prize money, there's maybe bonuses. Do you get their bonuses in their contract for wins? I don't know. There's other factors too.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, there are a lot of things you can, I would think that within the team, they're going to split the money, you know, but it's just, my biggest thing would be like, where would I expect my teammate to work for me later? And if someone does something to you in a situation like that, that they really help you or go all in to make something happen for you, then you're more willing to go all in the next time. And that's kind of, that would be my one consideration if I was a teammate going for it in the finish like that. And, you know, it was exciting for us to watch and it was a little bit of drama, but you know, but still, I think that would be the one thing I'd be like, I don't know.
Yeah. Were you ever in that? Were either of you ever in that position in racing where gifted or on the recipient of a win that way?
I've had teammates, I mean, you know, where something was really important for me and they like went all in to help me do it. And you come around and you're like, you know what, I'm going to just die for this person. I'm going to go out there and just, you know, do everything I can to help this person get a win because they put it out there on the line for me to accomplish something. For me, it was at the Giro 1 year. I had a teammate who was just amazing, Joanna Somariba, like one of the all-time best. And when she realized that we weren't going to win the overall because she was supposed to, we were working for another teammate to win the overall at the Giro. And when she realized it wasn't going to happen, she went all in to help me get the mountain jersey there, which was, you know, a huge deal. And I, you know, having someone of her caliber leading me out on climbs was a really incredible thing. And I felt like when we got to the tour that year, I was going to be the last person standing like there, you know, doing everything I could to get her a win there. And we did, we ended up winning, but it's kind of one of those things where somebody does something like that. They like really put themselves out there for you. You want to do it back for them and you're willing to go through anything to make it happen. And that would be my consideration if I was sprinting my teammate who was going to be the class, you know, more of a classics rider. And then I was expecting that person to be working for me later in the year. Because that team going into the tour is, you know, going to be awesome. And it's going to be very hard to beat Annemiek, but you're going to have everyone working together.
I've had a couple incidences of that. One, I made the break. It's Cascade Cycling Classic, so domestic race here, but I love that race. And I made the break on this Mount Bachelor stage, which I've always wanted to make the break. And I rarely was allowed to make the break. Like I wasn't supposed to be in that break because I can win that stage. Like, and I'm in the break and I'm like, I can win out of this group. This is going to be the best day of my life. The break got to go. Somehow I slipped in. I got in the break and in the radio, they're like, we don't like this. So at the bottom of Mount Bachelor, I had to stop, unclip and wait for my team leader, which is Kristen Armstrong, unclip on the side of the road and wait, give her a full lead out because she didn't want to lose too much time to a woman that was in the break with me. My heart was crushed because I just wanted a chance one day to win that stage. And I never did win that stage, obviously.
Did you consider going, I can't hear you. It's breaking up.
No. Believe me, I did. and they were like, we know you can hear us. And I'm like, oh, yeah, man. And then another time I'm in a break with a teammate. And so I had the Queen of the Mountains jersey kind of settled at that point. And she was trying to qualify for the Olympics. I was not going to go to the Olympics. So she really needed the UCI points. So she goes, why don't I win for the UCI points and you can have the Queen of the Mountains jersey. I was like, okay. And so we like crossed the line holding hands and she won and could go to the Olympics. But in my heart, I was like, my mom later was like, she called me. She's like, you let your teammate win? I was like, well, what else am I supposed to do? Like, she's like, here, have this polka dot jersey. I take the yellow one. And I was like, I like yellow better. I don't regret it though, because I do think I tried my best. And I'm not going to say she was the better teammate after that either. Mark?
Well, see, that's the thing. Sometimes you hope that if you're going to give something up, that someone's going to do something, you know, or you see the reason why you're doing it, you know, I mean, that they would pay you back somehow.
But my mom and my dad to this day are still like, remember when you could have won that stage race?
Oh my God.
But I feel okay with it.
What are some other observations from the early spring races? Gent-Wevelgem?
We've had Gent-Wevelgem. We've had Strade Bianche Drenthe, which is probably good. We could go there.
Well, we haven't really finished up the Strade Bianche because we haven't really talked about Kristen Faulkner yet in that scenario.
So yeah, Kristen,
by the way, rode an incredible race. I mean, it was, she rode amazing.
Yeah. So she had a 30K solo breakaway. She dropped her breakmates, 30K solo, got caught in the last kilometer. And she got third. And then people are looking at the photos. And she has a continuous monitoring glucose device in. She had a Super Sapien in her arm, which is illegal in the UCI rules. And later she got disqualified because people are looking at the photos. They're like, that's not legal.
Well, so, yes. And, you know, she said, she claimed that it wasn't, you know, connected, so that she wasn't getting any data from it or anything like that. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate that she had it on because that it's against the rules to have it on. And
is it against the rules to use outside of racing or entirely or just during racing?
Just in racing.
Okay.
And so like, it's fine that she trains with it. She just had to take it off for the race, which, you know, I don't really agree with the rule, but it's a rule and you can't go and just break the rule and not expect something to happen. I think it's unfortunate, you know, that they decided to disqualify her. But, you know, you knew something was going to happen because they aren't going to let everyone see the monitor on without doing something.
And yeah, those pictures spread across socials really fast.
So fast.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, yeah, there's a. It's, you know, we've talked about this before, I think, but, you know, it's not, it used to be whether the officials saw something or not. Mm-hmm. Now everyone's got a camera in their pocket along the entire course and, you know, nothing like that is missed.
Well, and I think, you know, afterwards, and not to just talk about the rule, I think the rule needs to be changed because it's just another way of monitoring. It's not, it's like a heart rate monitor or a power meter. It's just kind of one more tool that we have to help us with monitoring what's going on out there and becoming a better athlete. But her point to women using, you know, fueling differently at different times in the month and hormonally, it's very true and makes a lot of sense. And her point was it helps women make it so that they can stay properly fueled and not lose their period and other things that happen to women when they're racing that make them unhealthy. So it really could be a tool to help women monitor their health while they're in training and racing. And if you can use it in training and every other sport can use it in racing, I don't see why we're not thinking about changing that rule.
I'm with you. I'm such a fan of motorsports. And do you know how many monitors they're watching in the pit crew of what's going on with that car? It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, I think it's very cool. That's great information to have. And I never thought about, you know, a woman's body being different one day to the next, right? I mean, I've thought about it.
We're always changing. I know. Oh my gosh.
I think I tweeted the other day, like there's like 1.5 weeks max per month where I'm not like WebMD-ing, like what is wrong with my body? But that's like the luxury of being a woman. You're always like, I think I'm dying. But to be clear, I want to, there's just a few points. I'm going to agree. She had a hell of a ride and she is amazing. I hope she can continue to podium and win classics. Like, we can see how strong she is. She's incredibly gifted, smart, amazing person. Definitely that is a rule breaker. But for those that are interested, if you have actual diabetes, you can get a TUE, which is a use exemption, because you are diabetic and need a glucose monitor on. So she is not diabetic. So if you are, though, you can apply for a TUE and get clearance for the UCI. So there's that. The other part is just that there wasn't live tracking. The system, I've worn one of those for years. I personally, it didn't teach me a ton. I mean, it's great. I could watch my blood glucose move around, but I'm not sure I needed it. I had a very educational experience with it. We'll continue to use it if I need it or am interested, but it does hold data for 8 hours. So even though it's not being live tracked, she could still have gotten, which I'm sure she didn't, because after she's like, oh no, I'm not going to even upload that. But you would have data in the device that is stored for 8 hours. But the live tracking, I think she has a great point on the women's menstrual cycle and our hormone levels. However, it's just very unfortunate. And she is a champion, like in and out. And it's, for me, I'm more upset, not upset, sorry. I am more team management needed to help that situation, to make sure that doesn't happen. Like, team managers, is it your massage the night before? Is it like, did she have a long sleeve jersey yet? Like, you know, so no one saw it, but like, somebody in management also needs to tap her back on that, to make sure that she is, especially she's going to have that hell of a ride, right? Like, but to have her back, to make sure she's aware of the rules and what could happen from that. So it's just, it's heartbreaking for me to see, but once again, rules are rules, but it's difficult when Wout wins E3, it's his chain lubed during the race, which is also against UCI rules. He didn't get disqualified. Really?
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, how are rules applied? I think, you know, they wanted to make an example of it. And it's, you know, I feel like, yes, she broke the rule. Did it affect her ride? No. Maybe it should have been a lesser penalty, something where maybe she got a fine or something like that. But I thought it was a little harsh to disqualify her, but they were trying to make a point. And yeah,
that's the first I've heard about the chain loop too.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
They haven't. Yeah. So I think, yes, they're making an example of her, but it has to be fair across women's world tour teams, continental teams, et cetera, into the men's field too. And I 100% don't think that she had any performance enhancing capability because of wearing this monitor. However, it is against the rules. So I stick with Mari on that. It's just, you see people throwing trash. Sometimes they get disqualified, sometimes they don't. And I don't know, like, yeah, anyway. So it's
there's just no consistency. Yeah, there's no consistency on the penalties. Huh. Other, before we look, do previews of what's up, coming ahead, what else did you observe from the races that have already happened?
We've had some really crazy Belgian classics, and as well as probably an incredible performance for what I would call a women's monument. It's the longest running female only one day race, which is Binda, Trofeo Alfredo Binda. So we have Drenthe, which is this crazy cobble, windy, rainy. Mari, did you race Drenthe?
No.
Oh my gosh. So we got to see, I hate Drenthe, by the way. I mean, I hate to race it, love to watch it. You stay in a town, it's called Dwingeloo, in case you're curious. It just made me laugh every time I stayed in the town of Dwingeloo. It made me think I was in like some Portaloo or something, but, and it's just cobble, narrow roads, really windy. And you go up the Vamberg. The men also have a race that's Drenthe as well. And the Vamberg is, we call it the trash hill, because it's actually, it's a hill there in Dwingeloo, but it's so flat, but it's over a dump. So they've like filled it in. So it's just, it's like very technical kind of bike pathy way to get in, and you go up the Vamberg. But it was snowing So the course got shortened. So the race was for the women was only about 2.5 hours. So because the weather was so horrific, but then they ended up doing the Vanberg 5 times. So it's just it's like, imagine like this most hectic, scary, like entry to like this steep pitch down. And it's just very, it's a roller coaster of a race. And our girl, Lorena Wiebes won that. So we're like, yeah, that was really good to show her sprinting classic form. I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. And that was her big win for SD Works there. And then we can go into Binda, which is a very climby technical circuit in Italy. We also love this rider, Shireen. She was our U23 world champion cyclocross racer this year. It was our first UCI Women's World Tour win. And she also was the best young rider's jersey, which we were talking about her last year, because she's best young rider's jersey at the Tour de France Femme avec Swift and soloed her victory.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Have you ever seen anyone so happy to win? Like her smile, like I got on my bike after watching her win and I couldn't just like, I just had her smile in me because it was just, she's like, I won. And so
I love it that there are so many of these young women, like early 20s coming up. I think it's, you know, they're really showing themselves early this year, all the talent that's out there. And it just is going to be such an exciting year, but you know, the next few years are going to be really amazing. And especially when they're teamed with such great mentors too. I think that's one thing we didn't really talk about with the UAE race, but I mean, having Longo Borghini as your mentor when you're 21 years old, you know, these things are incredible.
Yeah, it's really exciting to see. So we can go when we too look at what I call the DSM 2.0. So Lorena Wiebes leaves DSM. Everyone's like, oh no, what's DSM going to do without this amazing sprinter? Mm-hmm. And we have this 21-year-old American getting second yesterday at the Antwerpen, Megan Jastrow.
It's not like she's come out of nowhere. I mean, you know, when you win the world championships as a junior, it's, you know, pretty good sign of things to come. And then, you know, everyone got hit with the COVID issues and stuff. So, you know, it kind of put her career somewhat or not in the spotlight as much for a couple of years. But, you know, one of the things that has always amazed me about Megan is she is such a, she has such a level head on her shoulder, and she's just so mature for her age. And when you're talking to her about tactics or what's going on in a race or what she sees, she just rides with so much more maturity than her age. Even when she was a junior, and that's when I knew her, I was always just so impressed. So to see her kind of maturing and take that next step to, you know, getting more confidence and being out there, it's just, you know, it's been cool to watch. Just so impressive with her team.
Yeah, I watched, is it Brute? Excuse me, Bruges.
Bruges.
And DSM looked great. They raced technically perfect. And it was impressive. So yeah, I think, you know, it's funny how you think, oh, someone leaves, what are they ever going to do? There's always more talent coming, especially now.
And that's where it's, so Pfeiffer Georgie won Bruges. And that's where I think is a good
I love that name, by the way, Pfeiffer Georgie. Just yeah, even hearing the commentators say it was great.
So I know Pfeiffer Georgie. So, and she was there in the finish. And I think when Megan was sprinting for second, obviously we can talk about the winner of Jens Wolvegem, because that was just a heck of a ride. But Pfeiffer Georgie and her were a 1-2 punch. So I don't know if Megan was actually sprinting for second. She was leading out Pfeiffer probably. And she just, you know, as a lead out, you don't look back, you go to the line, right? As you're the last lead out. So fun fact, yes, Megan is a 2019 junior world champion. She's also a bronze medalist in Tokyo for USA in the team pursuit. She knows sign language, fluent in sign language, and she just graduated college with a double major in exercise science and business. And I looked up the age, the average age of DSM, the women's team, 21.
Wow.
Amazing.
What? The average age of the men's team is 25. So, and also another rider to watch for there is she won 2 stages at the UAE, beating Lorena Wiebes, is Charlotte Kuhl. And she's also 21 years old. Great sprinter. I think we can watch her in the classics too, when it's not too lumpy. And she was a former speed skater. So average age 21, though. Crazy.
Wow.
I feel so old. I did get some requests to have Megan on the podcast, and I said, I think she's going to be too busy winning races. But
do you have any updates on the in that breakaway from Bruges? Two women went down so hard. I mean, one of them, I mean, just it was a face plant. I was really scared for her. I was like, my God, did she lose her teeth? Concussion. It was a nasty cross of wheels.
It was awful. So that was Hannah Barnes, and she rides for Human Powered Health. So she sustained a fractured radius and also a very significant some facial damage and stitches in her lip. And in that crash also was Julita Wild, Phoenix. And she had a fracture of her scapula, and Letizia Paternoster also went down with a concussion, but that crash was actually as hard as you thought.
Yeah, it was one of the worst ones I've seen in a long time. So, let's see. Is that all of your recap of what's happened so far?
That's a lot, though, don't you think?
Oh, no, this is great. This is great. You know, and by the way, those listening, we're not going to do this big, what do they call it? And on Instagram, a dump, you know, of like covering everything. We're going to have a rhythm for the rest of the spring classics and then getting into the stage races. So we are catching up. I do apologize for that. We're doing some catch up here, but there will be a regular rhythm where we're going to come in and talk about one race. That is definitely where we're heading with this.
Absolutely. I think that I do love a good dump, though, right? Like,
there's your highlight clip right there.
Mari and I, and as now you, JB, as a new fan, you know, we live and breathe cycling, but also especially these amazing stories and women's cycling. And as it's growing, one thing we haven't covered quickly would be Ellen Van Dijk is on a maternity leave. So I think Trek did probably one of the cutest pregnancy announcements ever. Our current world champion and our record holder, she's in her full aero bars, and she's got this little like baby carriage and the rainbow stripes behind the bike. They photoshopped it in. It was very funny. But we will be missing her this year. And Trek decided not to bring on a new rider to replace Ellen, because obviously she's irreplaceable. If you don't have Ellen, I mean, there's no one else like Ellen on this world. So she will hopefully be, she's due this summer, late summer, and then she'll be trying to build back into Paris 2024. So that'll be very interesting to watch. And I wish her the best on that.
It's different for everybody, but what's a realistic time frame from birth to racing?
Lizzie Deigman would be a really great example of that. She's just going to return. So we'll see, but she has come back to win within a year. Huge races like Paris-Roubaix post baby.
Kristen Armstrong did it too.
Yep.
So I mean, pretty quickly. It's amazing how fast they can get back after having a baby. I'm always amazed when I hear about it.
I took a picture of my wife on the spin bike, 9 months pregnant. She would not let me show it to anyone. It's awesome. It's just one of my favorite photos of her ever. Okay, before we get into the classics preview, which is really our main goal here, thanks for all this background of the early season. Let's take a second here, check in with Lance and a couple of our partners with some special offers.
Today's show brought to you by Ventum as well. Now, gee, this is special. You and me are back riding the same bikes.
I know, I'm excited.
I got the man converted. Every year, I'm like, man, we spend our whole lives riding the same bike. What are we? Well, except for a couple of those years, but we don't want to talk about those. But how's it been? How's the jump to Ventum?
I love it. I did a gravel race with my son last weekend on the GS1, and what a great fun ride! I mean, it's just it really handles the dirt really well. Super compliant, yet very stiff enough to where you feel the bike move when you need it to move.
Yeah, I get a lot of questions about both my NS1 and my GS1. The GS1 is just you want a rocket ship of a gravel bike, don't look any further.
I'm excited to take that NS1 on the cobbles in Flanders, which Johan and I will talk about later.
Well, exactly. We're going to talk about it right now. So we have Ventum is offering a special giveaway. So George, you're taking a crew of folks over to the Tour of Flanders. It's going to be you and Liz and Johan. You've got all the special VIP treatment that you guys always get. I don't know anything about that stuff, but You guys are going to be totally taken care of. We got a whole, I guess, from what you told me a minute ago, the damn thing sold out in like half a second. We got a waiting list. But Ventum will be there in full force. They're also giving away a nice little package here. Sign up, go over to wedo.team, click the Flanders giveaway tab. It takes 1 minute. The last day to enter is April the 2nd. Everybody who signs up, everybody who signs up in the drawing for a Ventum NS1, you're also eligible for prizes from Roka, Element, Fidlock, Manscaped, Montcush, The Feed, and Huckberry. All you got to do is head on over to ventumracing.com/themove. Use the code WEDO, W-E-D-O. Hello, I'm the one who invented the brand. W-E-D-U at ventumracing.com/themove. That gets you 10% off. Today's show also brought to you by HVMN. We talk about it all the time. This is the go-to ketone for this Peloton and certainly for this show. It is a game changer, whether you're looking for recovery or performance or mental clarity, right? This is the crazy thing for me. And I know, JB, you've touched on this a lot and are a firm believer, whether we call it COVID brain or just, you know, a hangover from South by Southwest. Ketone IQ and HVMN have changed the game. It actually crosses the blood-brain barrier, which is very hard to do for all you people that know about those things. Again, 60% of the Peloton is using it. Total game changer. Head on over to hvmn.com. Use the promo code THEMOVE. That gets you 20% off. hvmn.com, promo code THEMOVE.
All right, now we're going to look ahead at the Spring Classics. And as I just said a little bit ago, we're going to be on a regular rhythm here. Flanders is next on the horizon, which I'm sure you is. I'm assuming for women's racing, it is similar to the men's. Like Flanders and Paris-Roubaix are the big dogs. Is that accurate or no?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
From a classic standpoint and a true classics rider, it's everything. Flanders is my top five favorite race I've ever done. It's incredible. So it means a lot, but I think when we're looking at what riders we've been watching them, you're looking at like a Capecchi, a Grace Brown, some very strong, capable riders, and then we can look to also DSM. They're showing that well. Elisa Balsamo, she got second at Binda, so she's fit and ready. So if it comes down to a sprint, and then there's team tactics on how to possibly go solo, like we just saw at Gent-Wevelgem. Like Marlon Russo just soloed in by over 2 minutes. I think she's not
took a wrong turn.
And 5K to go, she took a wrong turn. Sorry, JB, we didn't cover this part. 5K to go, but she's had over 2 minutes. She's a doctor. She's Swiss, so it's first probably MD that's ever won Gent-Wevelgem. I'm just throwing that out there. And afterwards, she's like, so tired. She's like, I can't even like lift my arms. And she was very nervous about her time gap. I'm like, girl, you got this.
Well, in the last 5K, she asked like numerous times, especially after she had taken the wrong turn. But she didn't lose any time hardly even from the turn. I mean, no. That was wild. I mean, she looked like a metronome out there. Her pedaling was so perfect. And she was just, you're just watching you going, I can't believe she's just keeping this gap and extending it the whole way to the finish. It was crazy.
Which was really great teamwork of SD Works. So that's what we can look to for something like Flanders, because no one should give her 30 seconds. Don't give her 10 seconds. We watched her win a stage at the Tour de France Femmes avec Zwift the same way. And you give that girl 30 seconds, you're like, it's basta. You know, so we'd say, am I Italian team? Basta, which is like enough, over, like done, like basta. And so they had the numbers. They had in that front group at Gent-Wevelgem, SD Works had all their riders. And so they had the numbers to play. So when she went, they had the whole like second group syndrome where no one wanted to work because they don't want to bring Weebies to the line. Unfortunately, Weebies like took a little like cyclocross detour, crashed at her teammate. And then Capecchi actually stopped with her because she was screaming so bad. So she thought she was really hurt. So their whole team ended up in the side of the road, but it
didn't matter. Sounded terrible in that crash.
Yeah, I think she's
that's
okay.
Scary. Yeah.
So looking at Flanders, I think it goes to SD Works and to playing the numbers of strength. They have the sprinters with Weebies. They have Capecchi. If it gets a little too tough, she can also finish very well, as we know. And you have this rooster that can just motor away from an entire peloton and go so hard that she can't even like get dressed by herself. So I think that's a huge one to play. But I had a question looking into Flanders. It's like, where is Jumbo-Visma right now? Like, right? Like,
well, I mean, I think it, you know, when Marianne Vos is like hurt, that's a pretty difficult thing. And in Binda, she cramped in the last like bit of the race. And, you know, with the injury that she has, hopefully it was just cramping and from, you know, just being tired from not having done that kind of effort. But the way it was described as, you know, it just came on right away like that. That's a typical issue with iliac artery problems, you know, to where you can't keep going at all because your leg just won't, it doesn't recover. You're not getting blood flow into it. So I think, you know, it's a concern. Hopefully they fixed the problem. And, you know, but normally when you come back from an iliac artery injury, you're not experiencing that anymore. And so, you know, if it truly was cramping, then that's one thing. But we haven't seen her since. So
yeah,
I think that's a concern, you know?
And yeah. And she has, one of my favorite girls, Corinne Rivera's Lebecki now, Corinne Lebecki on the team, who's won Binda, won Flanders, but they're not quite in the mix as dominant as SD Works and Trek Segafredo are at this moment. So
what is Vos recovering from and what's the outlook?
She had a iliac, Mari, what's it called?
Well, she had a surgery to free up her iliac artery. Some people have to get the actual artery fit repaired, which is the normal thing. But sometimes if it's just kind of needs to be loosened up and freed up, they can go in there and do that. And that's what I think she had done was the freeing it up. But my concern is when somebody says that your legs just stop working, that's, you know, a sign of what happens with iliac artery issues. Gotcha. And so it makes me wonder, is the problem completely solved or was it really just a problem that she didn't have the kind of mileage in her legs to be able to deal with a race the length of Binda and the finish and stuff. So, you gotcha. Know, I think that's going to be interesting to see what happens. And hopefully it was just because she had to take herself out of training for a certain amount of time to recover and not that she has to go back in and actually have an iliac artery repair, because that would be a longer recovery time.
Yeah,
I'm adding that to my notes of things to look up and try to understand. iliac artery.
Yeah, I had it when I was racing, and it's, you know, way back. It was, I think, you know, it was a lot. We did more recovery time and stuff, but I think that, you know, things have improved a lot since then. And it's more common now that people go in and fix it right away and get it taken care of. But it's a really awful feeling to have. It's not that your legs just don't, they just stop to work. They stop working. And basically you need to let them refill again with blood so that you can start riding again. But it happens under like, say you were kind of easing into something like a threshold kind of interval, you don't get that massive flow of blood through your artery right away. So it kind of like opens up in time. But if the problem is when you do a huge jump and you have to produce a massive amount of power, like right away, all of a sudden your legs won't fill again. And then it takes a while for you to come back and be able to start pedaling right. So yeah, it just makes me wonder.
Yeah. She labeled it as an iliac artery constriction. So I'm not quite sure what surgery she had, but I do know she was off the bike for 10 weeks.
Constriction, I think, means that they have to go in there and free it up. Like it's just, they're not actually repairing the artery, which is what they'll normally do is repair the artery. But if it's just something that they can go in and loosen it up in there so that it's free again and can move, then that will solve the problem too.
More of a physical therapy approach to it, right?
Well, physical therapy, but still going in there and surgery.
Oh, yeah. There's okay.
It's just not surgery, to the actual artery.
Oh. Yeah. Wow.
Taylor Wiles had that surgery last year. And so for her coming back to, and what the reason I actually Googled this JB a lot, because then I'm like, anytime I don't feel good on a bike, I'm convinced, you know, back to being a woman, WebMD, you know, I'm just like, got it. But it happens when you're like Teo Gerkenhart's also had it. Like, you know, this is very common cycling injury, and it's basically only found in cyclists, but it's from that crunched over position. So you're putting out a lot of power on the pedals, but you're crunched. So you can think of where the iliac artery is. It's kind of in that pelvic area. So you're crunched over, whether it's time trialing or just in the drops, going really hard. So I went full down medical research on it. I haven't had it yet. So that's good news. I'll just like stay up on my hoods as upright as possible.
You have to have a genetic, you know, you have to be predisposed to having it happen, but some people do. And speed skaters too, Allie, get it. Anyone who's going to be over cross country skiers, people who are in that kind of bent position, but it's a thickening of that artery. And they basically go in there and they basically can make a slice and make it big again by putting on either, or in my case, they took a saponous vein and then patched it. So, you know, so that it can be larger again. But wow. Sometimes I think the issue is that if you get too tight in there and it somehow gets constricted, I think they can loosen it up to where it's free again. And then you get movement or you get blood flow through that area again. Or, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I think that's what they said. Marian Voss had was not the full surgery like Taylor's or mine, but kind of thinking that you can go in and make a fix to it and then come back quickly.
Gotcha.
Interesting. Wow. Well, there you go. That was a good lesson there, Mary. Well, I didn't know that Nordic skiing, because when I looked it up, it was like mainly cyclists. But it is mainly cyclists.
I mean, it's a much bigger sport than the other ones, I think.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Just so you know, I do have my Flanders flag behind us. I'm not Johan, but I was trying to like.
I appreciate the effort.
I have a Flanders flag behind me. I raced it on my birthday and my team mechanic stole the flag. So I hope we don't get reported now, because I really wanted one of those flags. So we like got out of the car, ripped one off of a bridge, and then the whole team signed it for my birthday.
Because it's a nice souvenir.
If you're racing Flanders on your birthday.
And how did that race go?
Oh, it was the best race of my life. It was so fun. Yeah. I just love Flanders so much. I had this Sela Gutierrez, who races on Movistar now. She's my teammate, and she big. This is the best race in the world. This is the best race in the world. And so I'm like, yeah, best race in the world. And then I had the best race ever. I didn't win, but I mean, I finished in the front group. I can't sprint.
Mindset, Allie. Mindset.
I know. I had so much fun.
You love it. So next time you're on Zwift, you can just say, no, I love that Richmond course.
No, Richmond, my whole team crashed. It was awful. It was so bad. But yeah, so it is Flanders to me is such an iconic race for women and men alike. And the crowds are amazing. So Mari, who would be your pick to win Flanders?
Ooh, you know, I'm still going with Capecchi.
Yeah, you took mine.
I know. What can I say? I think it would be nice, you know, she can repeat.
Yeah, I was going to pick Capecchi as well. She just won, and I do not know how to say this name, this race name. No care course. What? But anyway, she just won a big race. And she tragically just lost her brother, who was 29 years old. Also raced, and it's really heartbreaking. And her team asked everyone to give her space and time and not bother her. But she did show up to race a few days later and she won solo. And she said that she was riding with two people. So I have a feeling when she lines up to Flanders, she'll be riding very similarly, very passionate, grieving. And that course so suits her beyond anything. And if it comes down to a sprint, they also have Wiebes to win as well. So yeah, shoot. Should I change my pick? Let's do Flanders. I'm going to go with Capecchi as well. I can't.
See, I'll get the Olympics is the best at telling you the backstories of the athletes and where they get the extra motivation. If you guys start digging up those stories, I'm going to get really into this. Like, this is just amazing, because we don't do that in the men's. Like, we don't know any of their backstory. Like, this is that's just a dynamic I think you guys can really bring to this. That's interesting and something to watch for.
Yeah, I think we have so many incredible stories of these women to watch, and we have exciting races going on. So
is there a rider that's just known for just powering through the cobbles, just floats over them? Is there somebody that just that's their thing.
I think we have a handful of those riders. I mean, if you look at it, you wouldn't think Lizzie Deigman could power over the cobbles, but winning Paris-Roubaix, gloveless, you know, with bloody hands and just the right move at the right time, good handling skills. Capecchi can definitely bulldoze. And then look at Rooser. Like, that's another card to play too. You know, don't give that girl 30 seconds. She's gone.
I mean, yeah. There's so many women out there who are going to make it exciting. And I think that's what the racing so far has shown, is that, you know, there are a lot of people trying things. Having so many people winning solo is, I mean, I think pretty amazing. And just, they've been just fighting it out really hard, you know, lots of breaks, lots of, you know, attacking. It's been exciting.
Yeah, I think a wild card. Oh, sorry, Mari.
No, go ahead.
A wild card too would be Grace Brown. She's on FDJ, and we've watched her solo win quite a bit. Yesterday she looked really good at Bubblegum. It's just, she didn't have the numbers and the team dynamics. So I think while we're seeing people solo, and Mari, you can correct me or add input on that, but the teams are getting so strong. And if you miss a selection and your whole team's not there, it shuts down that chase group because people don't want to bring a rider like Aliso Balsamo into the finish or Lorena Wiebes. So it kind of shuts down that chase group when you have the power of teams, but the team power has been shuffling pending on the race and the circumstances, which makes the classic so interesting, because Paris-Roubaix and Flanders both have cobbles. They're very different. Amstel Gold and Liège are a different type of rider there. And then you have Flesh Wallonne, which is just a wild card because that's a completely specific type of rider. And then we get to see our little punchy climbers go instead of our like bulldozing like diesels. So the classics offer a lot for different types of riders. But anyway.
So your favorites for Paris-Roubaix would probably be very similar to Flanders, then, I'm guessing. Or no?
I think so. But the thing about Paris-Roubaix is there's just so many unknowns that, it's just like, who doesn't flat, who doesn't crash, you know, who's left kind of. So, yeah, I mean, like, if you just looked at power and who should be there, you would choose the very similar type of rider. But you just never know. Like, you know, Allie was saying, Lizzie Deigman wouldn't have been the person you would have thought would win Paris-Roubaix, but, you know, clearly she killed it.
Yeah. You can throw like Lamborghini in there too, but yeah, there's so much luck in Paris-Roubaix. Flanders isn't like as technical, or it doesn't have all the fluky crashing bad luck.
And whether it's wet or dry makes a massive difference too.
Well, that's what I was going to say too. Weather makes a huge difference.
And we've had dry years a lot. I mean, it's been very good conditions. We've had a good run for a number of years. I think it's due.
It kind of seems like this year is bringing on some crazy weather. So,
right. Like the race.
It's going to be really fun for us to watch.
Yeah, I know. And as a fan, I know the riders probably hate it. Well, maybe there's some.
Yeah.
Maybe
but some, you know, I think that like sometimes I always knew that if the weather was really bad, I had a chance of doing something better. And I feel like there are people who, you know, maybe don't like riding in those conditions, but know that if those conditions are starting to happen, it's kind of like, then, you know, it's game on. And like, you know, a lot of it's going to be like what we were talking about, Allie, a lot of it's mindset and how you approach it. And if you tell yourself you're stronger, tougher, and can handle more than the next person, then you have an advantage going into it, because a lot of people get into those situations and just, you know, from the time they wake up, they're not in the mood to go out there and ride. They don't want to be cold. They don't want to be wet. And, but you go, no, bring it on. I'm like better in these conditions. You guys, you know, it's, I think a lot of it's mindset, and probably why the Dutch and Belgians are so good at it, because they're in that kind of stuff from their kids.
Yeah,
they're growing up in Southern California or, you know, Florida.
Know, right. As a Texan, if it's below 60 degrees, I'm crying.
I know. Corinne's living in Belgium right now on Jumbo Visma. Gizmo, and she texted me the other day and I was on the trainer and she's like, let me guess, it's below 50. I was like, yeah. She's like, that's a warm day here. She's like, all right. But I was like, I don't have to. That's the good news is I don't have to anymore. I got Zwift.
touch on a couple of those other. You said Liège is requires a certain kind of rider. Elaborate more on that.
I think due to the climbing and the distance of the race, we're going to see more of the Damey type of a rider, that style of rider, like a Neodoma.
She's a name we haven't brought up yet, but she's always right there looking. And it's about time that something goes her way, I think, you know?
Yeah, I think for her to have the team around her would be great. I think that's just where she struggles a little bit with less of a strong team to help support her in those efforts. But yeah, I have her on Liège as well as Flesh Wallonne, I think is a good fit for her. And so when you look at Liège or Flesh, JB, you're looking at riders like the Cécile Attrit-Lugwid and Neodoma, and like maybe Amavi Garcia, she's riding well. And then the one rider we haven't talked about yet, which is shocking, is our Van Vleuten, Annemiek Van Vleuten. So
it is kind of shocking we haven't brought her up yet.
She's building. I saw her in the feed. She was like, she's not quite where she wants yet, but also these races don't particularly suit her 100%. But at Strade Bianche, she was off the back a little bit with Mavi Garcia. She just did an altitude camp with Marianne Vos. I saw that. So must've been something Dutch national team. Looked like a lot of Dutch riders were in Tenerife. But yeah, she's building definitely to peak. I just read something where she said that she is still retiring, unfortunately for all of us, but also that her win at the Tour de France Femme of X-Lift was more important than any gold medal she won. So that's how big that race was for women's cycling. So I think she's really going to target that. If she goes to the bottom of Flesh or Liège, you know, with I could see her making some moves as she's building her fitness there as well. She just lacks that pure punch, but like, man, over a long day and a lot of climbing, I think she could really make a lot of damage.
Well, and the Giro's just around the corner. Yep. Can you give me a couple favorites to watch for in the Giro?
Oh, yeah. We got to go with the Van Vleuten.
Yeah,
for sure. And then we can look at some of these. Like, I think that will be fun to see Gaia Rilini being Italian, racing the Giro, maybe having the freedom to fly uphill to see what that looks like. If she's not being a domestique. Italians always love racing the Giro really hard, as Mari knows. So you can look at Elisa Longo Borghini, stage wins by Balsamo. But we love the Giro, but I'm going to go heavy that the Tour de France Femme is going to be such a priority for so many women this year, especially leading to Paris.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just not enough. Yeah. They're going to focus on that. That's a big audience and it's had a big impact. Did that impact roll over into more sponsorship dollars for these teams that you can tell, going into this season?
I mean, it's kind of, you would think that it would. And I feel like everything's getting better, but then you see some of these teams having like money problems right now. And off the top of my head, Ali, I can't remember the name of the team, but they're having to maybe go get their bank guarantee to pay their staff and athletes, which is, you know, pretty scary considering how good last year was, you know?
And it's not really easy to borrow money right now either.
No. It's right? ZAAF, Team Zoff.
Team Zoff.
Yeah. And then also. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, they also ride the Women's Tour, the Tour of Britain, also called this is Tour of Britain, but it's called the Women's Tour. They're doing crowdfunding because they lost a sponsor. So they're trying to raise money to be able to put on this race. So there's still struggles there for sure.
Okay. Any parting thoughts before we wrap up? Or you were about to say something.
Oh, no, I was just saying it's definitely getting better, but it's still an uphill battle. You know, I mean, I think that now people know more about women's cycling and, you know, are following it and are interested. And I think that the sponsorship dollars are going to follow, but it's still so hard. I mean, to find money and to, you know, pull ourselves up, you know, and, you know, it seems like we're taking two steps forward, one step back, but it's happening, you know, I think it's happening.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, just on a local amateur level, I just raced around Texas. And now when I go, like they would throw the women and the pro 1-2 women into the Cat 3 with me. Like that's where it was then. Right. And now it's like, if there's just a women's training ride, women's specific training ride here, there'll be 100+ on a group ride. And our, you know, weekly crit series has a full women's field now. You know, it's just, it's nothing like when I was doing this 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. So if that's the training ground and the fan base, like this is good. And the men are watching it as well. Like I'm trying to learn this as fast as I can. So anyway, we'll go ahead and wrap this up unless you have any other parting thoughts. We'll be back for Flanders, which is obviously next weekend. Excited about that. Right. And then, like I said earlier in the show, we'll have a regular rhythm of covering one race and doing a deep dive into what's going on, the personalities, the tactics. Find those backstories for me, too. I like that.
I'm on it. That's what I do. I got you covered.
I love it. I love it. So anyway, Mari, Allie, thank you very much. And we appreciate everyone tuning in. You can always write to us. We'd love your feedback. Of course, we get it on YouTube. I always look at all those comments, but you can write to us directly, themove@wedo.team. Do you guys want to give out your like Insta socials real quick so people can follow you there?
Sure. I'm at Ms. Mari Holden, MS Mari Holden.
And I am at AM Tetrick, AMTETRICK on all platforms. And thank you guys so much for listening and watching the FOM.